Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
More blasted rhetoric from the Banana Republic for people who think capital punishment isn't going nearly far enough.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. It's been a quiet 24 hours in the world of social media and talk radio. Hardly anything to talk about. But don't worry, we've always got contingency plans here at the Independent Republic in case of days like this. I've just been explaining to you exactly why we should not be thinking about colonising Mars, even though Elon Musk says he wants to go there. I think it's a ghastly place. I think it's a bit of a dump. And I just don't think it's worth human habitation, to be honest. This morning, we are kicking off with Margaret Thatcher. The face of the former Prime Minister has been considered for the new £50 note, alongside a whole host of other possibilities. Not for her career as the leader of a nation, though, or her incredible glass-ceiling-busting attitude to men, or indeed her victory in the Falkland Islands, but because she once worked as an ice cream engineer before she went into politics. The world really, truly has gone completely and utterly stark, staring mad. I mean, who could possibly deserve it more than Margaret Thatcher, as a woman who was the first female Prime Minister of this country, a woman who broke all kinds of barriers in the sex wars, a woman who actually managed to lead this country out of the dark of the 1970s and the Union Brigade and all the rest of it. And why should she not have her face on a £50 note? I'd love to hear from you. 0344 499 1000. Coming up later on in the show, we'll be finding out why so many emergency calls are being made to the police that they should not answer. We're being told that as many as 5 or 6 or 7 or 8,000 calls are made by just 5 people who suffer from mental health problems. Now, while these people may be in terrible need of some form of help, whether it be from the emergency services or the ambulance service or from the hospital service or from the social care service, what they don't need is help from the police. And we should be able to tell the police you don't need to answer these calls because it's stopping you from actually doing your proper work. We'll also be finding out what sudden death chess is all about as well, because the chess world is absolutely in turmoil. There's €1 million up for grabs. Whoever wins the chess championships this week, and it happens to be going on in London, we'll bring you all of that as well. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, it may well be that you don't ever see a £50 note in your life. It may well be that you don't really have any need to have a £50 note in your life. After all, we live more or less in a cashless society. We live now more or less by contactless card. And actually carrying around money in the order of £50 notes is probably the place of gangsters, the place of drug dealers, and the place of people who really don't pay any tax. So for most of us, you will probably never, ever see a £50 note. However, there is going to be a £50 note coming out very shortly, and we are going to find out coming up from the Bank of England, precisely whose face is going to be on that £50 note. At the moment, there are several contenders, including, of course, Margaret Thatcher, Lady Thatcher. Alexander Graham Bell is another name, of course. He's been credited, of course, with inventing the telephone. Patrick Moore, the TV astronomer. Gerald Durrell, conservationist and best-selling author. Baroness Wallace, inventor of the Barnes Wallace, not Baroness Wallace. I haven't changed his gender there by mistake. Inventor of the bouncing bomb used by the dam busters in 1943. Frank Whittle, jet engine pioneer. Mary Anning, 19th century fossil hunter. Jethro Tull, not the band, the inventor of the horse-drawn seed drill around 1701. Dr. David Kelly, which is a bit of an odd choice. And Oliver Sacks, a neurologist who wrote The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. I don't see any names there there, which are better than the name of Lady Margaret Thatcher. And I'm going to ask you for what you think about this as well. 0344 499 1000. Let's talk to Sarah John, Chief Cashier at the Bank of England, to find out what the process is and what could actually happen here. Sarah, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning, Mike.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us. I mean, I'm looking down this list of names, and I have to say, aside from Margaret Thatcher, I don't really see a standout sort of candidate, really.
We've been absolutely amazed by the number of nominations we've received. So 174,000 and counting, which is fantastic. And I think it just shows the breadth of contributions that the UK has made to the field of science. We've obviously put out a list of over 800 possible names. As you say, there are so many really fantastic people on there. So it isn't obvious at this stage that there is a standout person who should be on the note.
And how did the process begin, Sarah? Did you just ask for sort of members of the public to nominate people?
Absolutely. On the 2nd of November, the governor announced that the field for the character for the £50 note would be science. And we've basically just asked the public to say who do they think should be on the note in the field of science with a great contribution to UK science.
OK. And so, I mean, are you in a position to sort of add up numbers, or do you just basically choose from a shortlist? How does it work?
It's not a popularity contest, so it's not to do with the number of votes for any particular character. We have an advisory committee, a banknote advisory committee, that are formed of a field of experts, including four scientists for this particular note. They will go through every single one of these eligible names and start that shortlisting process in the early new year.
OK. So is there anything anybody can do to sort of add more names to it, if you like? I mean, what is your criteria likely to be as to how you choose? If it's not a popularity contest, you have to have some form of measurement, right?
So nominations are still open. They're open until the 14th of December. You can go to the Bank of England website and there's a link there and you can just type your character in. So if you look at the list and the name's not on there for the person you would like to see on the banknote, please do take the time to go on the website and nominate them. It's a very quick and easy process. What we will be looking for is someone who has made an absolutely outstanding contribution to the field of UK science and someone who has really influenced British society, either in the past or even has continued to influence it today.
Right.
And that's what the advisory committee will be looking for.
So if somebody was to nominate me, for example, I could even be on the list.
I'm afraid you're not dead, so you don't qualify.
Well, don't worry, there are lots of people in Sunderland who wished I was dead, but that's another story.
But characters do have to be deceased.
Okay.
And they also have to be real. We do get quite a lot of people nominating fictional characters.
All right.
So please, not fictional characters. But really, those are the two main criteria.
Okay. And I mean, who's on the committee who will make the final decision? Because it's quite a big thing, this, isn't it?
It's a really big thing, and I'm personally very pleased to be involved with it. So I'm a member of the Banknote Advisory Committee. There's 9 members altogether, 2 members of the Bank of England, so that's myself and Ben Broadbent, the Deputy Governor. There's then 3 permanent external members of the committee. They were involved in choosing Turner to go on the Polymer £20 note, so they are the permanent advisory members. And then, as I say, we've appointed 4 eminent scientists, people in the field of science, to join the committee to do the shortlisting.
Okay.
They will actually come up with a list of around about 5 names, which will then be discussed with the governor. And ultimately, it will be the governor's decision who finally appears. But the advisory committee will be taking these 816 names and whittling it down to about 5.
OK. And interestingly, when I'm reading the story today, it doesn't suggest Baroness Thatcher is in there for her services to politics. It's more about her services as a food scientist working for J. Lyons & Co. In 2 years from 1949 to 1951.
That's right. At the moment, what we have done to say whether these characters are eligible is literally looked at whether they have made any contribution whatsoever to the field of science in the UK. And Margaret Thatcher, she was a research scientist before she began her political career. So we've not made any judgments about how much of a contribution people need to make at this stage. That will be a conversation for the advisory committee, and that will happen in the new year.
OK. And as far as the sort of the anti-Margaret Thatcher brigade is concerned, I mean, it's quite a controversial choice if you go down that road. I'm not suggesting that you will. Are you prepared to sort of put up with the usual, social media flaming and abuse that you're going to get if you actually put Margaret Thatcher's face on there?
One of the things that we want from an advisory from a character on one of our notes is that they bring the nation together and they're not divisive. So absolutely, we will be looking for someone, hopefully, who can inspire a vast majority of people in the country.
Okay. And who would you like to see on it, or are you not able to say that?
I don't think I can say that. I've got a lot of names to go through, and I wouldn't claim to have looked at every single one of those 816 names in detail yet, and I want to do that first.
OK. And just for the sort of the mind-bogglingly kind of very serious followers of the Bank of England, how many £50 notes are you going to actually be producing?
There's currently 330 million £50 notes out there.
350 million?
330 million right. £50 notes.
Okay.
So that's the current stock of notes that are out there, and that's roughly the stock that we'll be looking to replace with the new notes.
Oh, okay. And so will they be the new kind of plastic style notes as well?
They will be on polymer, that's right. So they'll be the same style as the 5 and the 10 that you've seen and the 20 that will come out in 2020. They'll be a bit smaller than the current £50 note, so they'll be roughly the same size as the current 20. So they will start to fit in wallets, which I know is something that people often say to me about the current £50 note.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is, as I was saying at the top of the show, we are now more or less in a sort of cashless society. The number of times I actually spend cash to buy anything is pretty rare now. Is that the case with most people?
It's definitely true that use of cash is declining, but last year 37% of transactions were still cash transactions. And actually, for about 2 million people, just over 2 million people in the UK, cash is actually still the main way that they make all their transactions.
Right.
So it is definitely the case that there is a move towards alternative payment methods, but cash is still a very important payment method, and it's likely to be for a number of years to come.
Okay. Well, we should look forward to the final decision-making process. Sarah, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Sarah John, Chief Cashier at the Bank of England. Now, apparently, we now know what the process is going to be like. They're going to decide in January whose face should appear on the £50 note. I really cannot see why anybody would not want to put Margaret Thatcher's face on there. I know that she's a very divisive person. I know that there are lots of people in lots of different parts of this country who think that she was a terrible leader, that she did terrible things to the working classes in this country, that she closed down all the mines, that she stopped trade unionists from doing what they were supposed to be doing. I take a very different view. I think, as I know from growing up during the 1970s, that Britain was a basket case when she got into power in 1979. For those of you who think that I'm some kind of a hard right Tory, by the way, the one time I ever did actually campaign for a political party was in 1979 when I was living in Bath. Chris Patten was standing as the Conservative candidate. He got elected and kept that seat for the Conservative Party for many, many years to come. I actually campaigned for a guy called Martin Baber, who was the Labour candidate at that particular time. So if any of you think that I'm some kind of Thatcherite through and through, I'm not. But what I am saying is that Margaret Thatcher transformed this country. She did bring great things to this country. She may have indeed destabilised parts of it. She may well, as you look back onto her legacy, have done things wrong. However, you cannot deny that she was a massive political figure in this country, and I think it would be only right and proper for us to put her face on the £50 note. And I want to hear from you. 0344 499 1000. Sadly, you can't nominate me because I'm not dead yet, despite what some people up in Sunderland would like to see. And of course, you can tweet us as well at Talk Radio at IROMG. We'll take your calls coming up next. 0344 499 1000. Why shouldn't Margaret Thatcher be on the £50 note? This is Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Coming up a little bit later on in the show, we're going to find out why arguing in front of your children is actually a good thing, because it might actually create a world for them in which they can see that sometimes people don't get on with each other. Sometimes it's okay to have a difference of opinion. Sometimes it's even all right to shout at somebody else because you don't like what they're saying. Sometimes people get upset for no good reason. Sometimes people take offence for no good reason. Some people are completely and utterly childish when it comes to some issues, OK? I have heard nothing from anyone in Mars. I can only conclude that the Martians are a very, very mature people. I can only conclude that they don't care what I say about their home planet. They don't care if I say it's red. They don't care if I say it's too hot. They don't care if I say it's a dump. They have no clue about whether anyone on this planet cares what they think. And that's the way it should be, isn't it? 0344 499 1000. Let's talk to Chris, who's in Chichester, about Margaret Thatcher. Hello, Chris.
Morning, Mike. How you doing?
Very good morning to you, mate. How are you hanging this morning?
Well, it's a bit overcast here. It's normally sunny because you know Chichester is the sunniest city in the country.
Is that right? I did not know that.
Official.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, yes. The thing about Margaret Thatcher, yes, she should be on that note. She was a wonderful one. I was a massive fan. The thing about Margaret Thatcher, though, you know, you get all these lefties all going about hating her. And she did this and she did that. They, 2 points, they listened to her and they respected her. And that's very important. Even if you've got enemies who respect you, you know, definitely she should be on that. And the same applies to Jacob Rees-Mogg. People, they all go on about being a toff, but they listen to him and respect him.
Yes,
and
that's true. Important. That is true. And funnily enough, Boris Johnson is the complete opposite of that, because I think although he's still a popular figure, nobody really respects Boris Johnson anymore. Nobody really listens to what he's got to say anymore, you know, which is an interesting point. Thanks, Chris. Thanks very much indeed. Let's talk to Susan, who's in Exeter. Hello, Susan.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Susan. How are you today?
Well, I just want you not to cut me off in midstream, because you always sort of cut me off when I'm getting going and say,
well, I'm sorry,
we've got to go to the news.
Well, that's because you call in at the wrong time, Susan. I mean, we've got to go to the news soon again.
I hope it's right now. I wish you a very good morning.
Thank you, and to you too.
I love the show. I adore you, but, you know, let's just keep it, you know, keep it real.
Let's keep it real, yeah.
Regarding £50 notes, you were speaking to a very, very lovely lady earlier on. She said the Bank of England is producing. Now, you have to excuse me because I left school early, but I do ask questions.
Yes.
I like to think there's some brain cells there.
I'm sure there are. I'm sure there are. I have no doubt that there's a lot of brain cells.
I don't know. But this young lady, this very lovely lady, said that the Bank of England is producing £350 million worth of £50 banknotes.
Yes, I think it was £330 million, but very close, yes.
Right, OK. So can you tell me, when nobody needs £50 notes, why the hell are they in circulation?
Well, I wouldn't say nobody... Well, hang on, Susan. I wouldn't say nobody needs them. I mean, the fact is that there are people who, I'm sure, have lots of £50 notes.
I've never seen one.
You've never seen a £50 note?
No.
You don't even know what colour it is, then.
Well, it was pink last time. I saw one was about 30 years ago.
You just said you've never seen one.
Well, it was 30 years ago, Michael.
Well, they're still the same colour.
Look, get to the issue. Why are they in circulation when nobody needs them anymore?
Well, because you're the only person saying nobody needs them anymore. Obviously, the Bank of England
thinks... Well, do you get them out the cash machine?
I occasionally have a £50 note when it's given to me, but very rarely.
Nice.
Very rarely.
Didn't you? Oh, okay.
You know, when I do jobs for cash only, sometimes I get a big wadge of £50 notes in my hand.
Oh, we don't want to talk about that. I hope it's tax anyway.
Yeah, no, I always pay tax, of course.
What do you think... I know, sweetheart. What do you think about kids being knocked off their mopeds by the cops?
I think it's a very slippery slope. I said this to Mike Parry the other night.
Everybody's getting
very worked up about it, saying, what a great idea. Isn't it fantastic that the police are operating like this? I think it's very dangerous.
I'm worried. My main worry is that the police will get done. Because if that kid smashes his head against a car, or because I was in nursing for a while, and if that kid, the cops are after me, they rip the helmet off. If they smash into a car or a wall or something else, and they get a smashed head and they're in hospital, the coppers are going to get done. And I'm worried.
Yes. Well, I think it's a very dangerous sort of precedent to set, to allow police officers without any kind of assuredness and without any certainty. I mean, how do they know these guys are criminals? How do they know it's not just some kid on a moped? How do they know that he hasn't just gone out on a moped on his own and got caught up in something that he didn't know was going to happen? You know, you can't just go around running people over.
No, but you see, they're not running people over. You should keep the back wheel.
Yeah, but they will, though.
Hang on, Michael. If you're walking along the road on the phone to your lady or one of your children or your whatever,
yes,
and a kid on a moped comes and whips it out of your hand,
yes,
how would you feel? I would be absolutely furious.
I would be very annoyed. Yes, that's absolutely true. Somebody tried to do that to me once. I was standing at a bus stop and there were two guys on push bikes, right? And the one came behind me and sort of skidded to a halt. So I turned around and I happened to be holding the phone in my hand. And the other guy who came around the other side tried to grab it out of my hand. Luckily, I held onto it very tightly and just started shouting at them like some demented maniac. And I think they thought I was so much trouble, they left me alone.
But would you, I mean, don't you think that those people should have been taken to task for doing that?
Well,
to
they
you?
Should have been arrested.
We should behave
absolutely.
Like that?
They should have been arrested.
They should be, yeah. So if it's on a moped, it's even worse. No.
Well,
clip the
now, the news is coming up very
arrested.
Soon, Susan. I must warn you, this news is coming soon.
Well, I love you anyway.
I know you do. It's very kind of you to say that. Thank you, Susan. We'll talk to you again very soon. Susan from Exeter there, got lots to say and not so much time to say it in, unfortunately. But, of course, you can do the same. You can join the conversation, 0344 499 1000.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, imagine a situation, right, where you've got one person calling the police thousands and thousands and thousands of times, not because they've got a crime being committed around them, not because they're trying to tell the police that they've just witnessed a robbery or that somebody's trying to break into their house, but basically because they have problems with their mental health. These are people who are unstable. These are people who need to be looked after by medical practitioners. These are people who should probably be under the care of doctors or at the very least in some kind of a sanitarium. However, we've learned this morning that five people, that's just five particular individuals in 2017, in that year, called the Metropolitan Police a combined number of 8,655 times. Now, if you're a police officer, you know that there's only so many calls you can answer in a day. You know there's only so many jobs you can do in a day. You know there's only a certain amount of work you can get through and a certain amount of much of caseload that you can deal with. Now, it turns out that the police are now receiving thousands of these types of calls from GP surgeries and from social care agencies and from mental health patients themselves, because they're getting shunted from pillar to post and they don't know what to do. And they think the police are there to help them, which, of course, they're really not. Let's talk to Chris Hobbs and find out why this has become such a problem. Chris, a very good morning to you.
Yeah, morning, Mike.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us. Now, you and I both know that I've been a bit unfair to the police, perhaps in the past. I've jumped all over them and said, you know, what on earth are they doing? What are they thinking? Why can they not use their time better? But now, reading these kinds of stories, I have to say, I'm a bit more sympathetic towards them.
Well, it is a major problem, and it's a problem that's grown up over the years. Part of that, of course, is down to cutbacks the government have made to the NHS, to mental health services. And also the question does need to be asked is why is we do have this explosion of people who are having mental health crises? And, of course, sadly, as you rightly said, it's the police who are having to talk people down off of bridges, off of tall buildings, off of clip tops, and they do a fantastic job in saving lives of these people who are in crisis. And then when they've talked them down, very often, there's nowhere to take them.
So they just go back up there in a couple of days' time, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, and you've not just got adults, of course, you've got a real problem with children, and now children, you can't even take them to a police station.
Yeah.
So A&Es often don't want them. There are no beds. These crisis intervention teams very often aren't available or don't want to come out or simply are suffering themselves from overload. So it's the police that are stuck with the problem. And, of course, it's very demanding, very stressful for the officers. They do get some training, but, of course, they're not mental health professionals. And by and large, they do a fantastic job. But while they're looking after people, sometimes I read recently on Twitter, police had to look after someone having a mental health crisis for 32 hours.
Right.
because there was nowhere to take that person. So,
well, I was going to say, really, I mean, is what problem. Is the procedure? I mean, do they? Is there a particular procedure, or is it just kind of deal with it as best you can on a kind of an ad hoc basis?
Well, it depends where you are. I mean, if the person's having a mental health crisis on private premises, then police have got very little power to do anything about it. If they're in the street, then you've got Section 136, which means the police can take them, as it were, into custody, for want of a better term, for their own protection and the protection of others. But then having taken them into custody, they then have to place them. You don't want them in a police cell. As I say, you can take them to A&E, but often, especially at night, A&Es haven't got any professionals anyway. They're just as strapped as the police. So there is nowhere. And it, but in the old days, Mike, when I was a young PC at Southall, I remember we had to talk somebody down off of a bus garage roof. And opposite us was a very large mental health hospital, which we could simply whip them over there and they'd be dealt with. That hospital was now blocks of flats.
Right.
So now it's just two small wards that are always filled up. And so there isn't anywhere to take these unfortunate individuals. And it's down to poor old police again.
And exactly. And when did it get like this? Because I know that you're quite right to say that there's been cutbacks in the health business as well as there has been in the police business. But it strikes me, and you may not be able to answer this question, but it seems as though there are many more people with mental health issues and problems now than there ever used to be.
Yeah, it's hard to say, but you're quite right. Yes, there has been. It's sort of just gradually crept up on us, hasn't it? More and more cases, more and more calls to the police. Nobody really seems to know why it is. Maybe it's something to do with early intervention or lack of it.
Yeah.
In that people are left to their own devices. If you want a GP's appointment and you're having a mental health crisis, you're going to have to wait 3 weeks.
Right. And that's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, one of the things that I'm finding fascinating here is that calls to the police for support with mental health incidents peak, apparently, between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. on weekdays and between 5 p.m. and 10 p.m. at the weekend. So, I mean, GP surgeries are open between 3 and 6 and A&Es are open between 3 and 6. I wonder why that's the time when most people make those calls.
That's a good point. And to be quite honest, I would have thought it would have been late at night rather than during those particular times. I don't know. I think there just needs to be more work done into why it is that so many more people are in crisis. And as you say, those times really struck me as being quite unusual.
Yeah.
Someone needs to get a hold of it, get a grip of it, and see exactly what's going wrong and what's needed to put it right. And the government, of course, has just said, Nick Hurd was on Twitter this morning saying, yes, we're putting more money into the mental health system now but to ease the burden on the police. But, you know, that money isn't going to work overnight. Where are you going to get these mental health professionals from? You can't make them up out of nowhere.
Yeah, no, we were doing a story last week, in fact, about how Theresa May wants to introduce these kind of roving hit squads, for want of a better phrase, of doctors and pharmacists and nurses, people who can basically react quickly to situations, mostly to do with social care and moving people from, say, you know, a hospital bed into their own home, or moving some from a hospital bed into a care home or something like that. But it wasn't really to address this kind of problem, because I'm seeing another stat here. Andy Rhodes, Chief Constable of Lancashire, saying his force spends 20,000 response hours every month dealing with these kind of mental health issues. Now, that takes away a massive amount of time from the sort of pursuit of real crime.
Absolutely. And this is one of the problems that police face. I think I might have said to you when we were debating a couple of weeks ago, and I'm still recovering from the bruises.
Terribly sorry. It's all in, you know, it's all in good order. You know that.
Yeah. But yeah, we were sort of debating this about police time and the fact that only something like, depending on which figures you believe, but it's less than half of police time is actually spent dealing with crime.
Yeah.
And if you could... If they could lose the mental, excuse, there's a plane going over it. If they could lose the mental health side of their work, then obviously they would have free up much more time.
Right.
Interestingly, a good friend of mine is a mental health nurse.
Right.
She's been doing it for about 25 years. She's now on the triage. She does phone triage.
Okay.
So she desperately tries to deal with people over the phone who call this number.
Right.
And she tries to deal with it, as I say, herself. Then if that doesn't work, if she thinks a person is likely to harm him or herself or others, then she has to try and get a mental health crisis intervention team out.
Right.
She says that often proves extremely difficult. And although she hates to do it, as a very last resort, she has to call the police.
Yeah.
Because otherwise that person could either as we know, perhaps harm themselves or harm others. So she doesn't like, she's aware of the pressures on the police, partly because I tell her. But she doesn't want to do it, but sometimes there is nowhere else for her to go and she has to call the police.
Right. Which is an extraordinary state of affairs, isn't it, really, when you think about it? I mean, is there anything that the police could do by way of, I mean, I know it's going to sound perhaps a little bit harsh, but by way of just dissuading people from calling them, where, because you've got to remember, if we're talking about 8,655 phone calls being made just by five people, you know, these are clearly calls from people who are disturbed, people who are thinking the wrong way, who are thinking the police can help when they probably can't, but are taking up an awful lot of the police's time. I mean, how could we maybe dissuade them from making those calls, or could we set up a different helpline or something?
Well, I think the helplines already exist, and that was sort of, you know, one my friend was sort of dealing with. Well, it's an NHS one. Certainly, I remember watching a couple of years ago a fly on the wall programme, and it was officers in Blackpool.
Yeah.
And they were out on patrol, they got a call, and they said, oh, we know this address, we know this person, she's always calling us, but we know her history, and we have no choice but to attend. And they turned up, and the camera crew actually went in with the police. And there was a woman there, obviously with massive alcohol issues, mental health issues.
Yeah.
And it was almost as if she just wanted somebody to talk to. And the only people who would come out and talk to her would be the police. And they were trying to dissuade her. You know, please don't call us. You know, we're very busy, blah, blah, blah. But it was obviously it wasn't registering because of the woman's state. And they said, we can't just not go, because if she does something, if she does harm herself, for example, then we are going to be in trouble, basically.
Yeah.
We have no choice. And we don't want to see someone get hurt or hurt themselves.
That is the problem, isn't it? I mean, it's interesting that you mention alcohol problems as well, because I think drug problems as well. I've got Jennifer has tweeted saying, the mental health issue is primarily caused by drug abuse. Tackle the drug problem and get rid of foreign drug lords. Plus, rather than close hospitals, more should be open. I mean, it's all connected, isn't it, in a way? Because obviously, there's only so much time you can devote to doing the drug dealers if you're looking after the victims of the drug dealers, who are obviously some people who have then got mental health issues as a result of taking the drugs.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think without a doubt, some of these problems are caused by drink and alcohol, but not all of them by a long chalk. Again, according to my friend that deals with these people, and according to the police who are calling them out, some people are in crisis. And we've even got now a situation, Mike, haven't we, because there's greater understanding, where police officers themselves are now admitting to having problems, obviously by virtue of some of the things they have to deal with.
Sure.
And so they themselves are having to seek help and treatment, whereas perhaps a few years ago they might have suffered in silence.
Right.
And I can remember one police officer who tried to kill himself many years ago, but actually took everyone totally by surprise that he was having any problems at all.
Right.
So in some ways, perhaps people are more willing to admit they've got problems. And yes, alcohol and drugs, some of it, but I think a lot of it isn't. And you have to ask why.
No, quite. And I guess, Chris, as well, this kind of explains in quite good order what exactly the problem is for a lot of officers who are leaving the force, as you've told me many times before, because you don't really, I mean, if you sign up to be a police officer, you don't really expect to have to deal with these kinds of issues. You know, you understand arresting people, you understand, you know, occasionally maybe escorting criminals to court or doing whatever the expected police work is, but talking people down from trying to kill themselves or trying to safeguard people who really should be in care. It's not your job, is it?
No, it's not. And as I say, police do get some training and there's talk of improved training. But no, it's not what people really signed up to do. But it is something I have to do. And of course, the worst thing for officers is where, despite their best efforts, they fail.
No.
And
quite.
The individual harms themselves or does worse. Recently, there's some footage on YouTube that was featured on a TV program recently. And this was a guy, police were called, he was behind a glass door so they could see him. It was in a block of flats. He had two knives. They were trying to talk him out. They had a taser. They had the glass door in between them. And then all of a sudden, he started to cut himself. He started to harm himself. So they had no choice then but to open the door. They fired the taser. The taser didn't work. And he came out and attacked, and you could see it on this body-worn camera, trying to stab the officers with these two knives. And God, thank God they managed to subdue him. And he was someone who was having a severe mental health crisis. But this is what they had to face. I mean, it was horrendous to watch, Mike, absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And fair play to the officers. you know, they went in to save himself from hurting himself, nearly ended up getting seriously injured or perhaps worse themselves, but managed to achieve the result and subdue him. But it was a horrendous thing to watch.
No, I bet it was. Well, Chris, listen, thanks very much indeed for your help on this one. And obviously we shall go forward. I'm sure we'll have many more robust debates about things. But on this occasion, I think we can agree.
Indeed. Yes. Very thanks, nice Chris. To agree with you, Mike.
Yeah, it is nice, isn't it? It makes a change. Chris Hobbs, former Metropolitan Police officer and detective. He's absolutely right to say that this is not what the police are there for.
More blasted rhetoric from the Banana Republic for people who think capital punishment isn't going nearly far enough.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham
on Talk Radio.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. 03444991000 is the number. Anthea says this. The pharmaceutical conglomerates are also at fault with doctors over prescribing drugs for patients that inherently do not need it. I personally believe that some doctors are given backhanders to promote certain drugs to feed the billions to the pharmaceutical companies, I should say. Big fraud. Well, there's an awful lot of strangeness that goes on around pharmaceutical companies and drugs that are given out and drugs that are not given out, to be honest. And I'm not sure we'll ever get to the bottom of how that all particularly works. We're going to take some calls on this. 03444991000. Sarah is in Essex. Hello, Sarah.
Hello there.
How are you doing? What do you want to tell us?
I'm a mental health nurse.
Okay.
And I've recently, a pilot has recently ended, so I was actually sent out with police to mental health related calls.
Right.
To be there when those 999 calls come in with a person in various states of, you know, of crisis,
sure,
or mental health need. We would go out and I would obviously do the assessment and the police would deal with any crime-related issues. So I suppose I'm in quite a privileged position that I can see both sides of the coin. I can see the police's perspective and the health perspective. So the first thing I'd really like to say is that pilot, in my opinion, was extremely successful.
Right.
And all the officers' opinions were that it was a good thing and that they found it really beneficial, not only to learn sort of our perspective and how we assess and things like that, but also to reduce the amount of 136 sections, reduce the amount of calls. But unfortunately, that was stopped. And from what I understand, that is from not only cutbacks from the health side, but also from the policing
right.
side, which I think is a loss to everyone,
sure.
really.
And was it stopped because they didn't have enough money to pay people to answer the calls, as it were?
No, I don't. Not as far as I'm aware. I mean, this went to the upper echelons and back down.
Right.
And I was quite keen to go to those, you know, the budgeting meetings and explain the beneficial aspects to it.
Mm.
So I don't exactly know the reason why, unfortunately. But there were talks about setting it up in a different arena, but I haven't heard anything about that. And this
right.
was in the summer.
Okay.
I really do feel that that's more the way forward for this issue. I mean, I know earlier we were talking about these people need to be in hospital or be under a different element of care.
Right.
I mean, I could talk for days and days about this. I'm quite passionate about this.
Well,
subject.
No, I'm very glad you've called, Sarah, because we don't often hear it from the horse's mouth, as it were. So, I mean, in your view, Sarah, let me ask you this. Why are there so many people at the moment, seemingly, I mean, it could be my imagination, but it seems like we've got more and more people suffering from these problems than we used to ever have?
I mean, I think it is a quite complicated issue.
Yeah.
The previous gentleman was talking about the video of the man with the machetes and coming out. I believe that gentleman was actually high on drugs at the time,
right.
which further complicates things. So obviously, from a perspective of a mental health clinician, if someone is high on drugs or incapacitated for alcohol, it's really difficult for us to assess. And we always assess someone when they're sober or, you know, are able
right.
to have those, because you can't divorce the two, of course, but you can't fully assess the risk in that situation.
Mm.
So I think drugs and alcohol are part of it, but also we've got a lot of time for change. One in four people, you know, experience mental health difficulties, which we all know now. We're all rehearsed on it. I mean, the issue for me is that there's nothing underpinning it. So if you look at the whole system, including, you know, hospitals, whether that's community mental health teams, home treatment teams, how they all work together, there's no real communication between all of them, for one, but also it's a different criteria to hit. So to be seen by a community mental health team, for example, you've got to have, you know, a severe and enduring mental health condition, which lots of people don't. They just struggle with day to day. They need someone to help them out to get back to where they were, but there's nothing there. So I think that's the main thing, as you were talking about. It's more prevention.
Mm.
It's that preventative work that's going to help these things in the longer term.
Sure, it's very short-sighted. Sarah, listen, fantastic call. Thank you so much. Do call in again because we talk about this stuff quite a lot on the show. Sarah there from Essex giving us a very interesting and very knowledgeable view of what it's like to be on the inside of dealing with these mental health patients and their problems. Let's go to Nathan now, who's up in Sunderland. Hello, Nathan. Hello, Nathan.
Hello.
Hello.
Whoa, my great burger neck.
Are you singing, Nathan? Nathan's singing. Now, that was the voice of Sunderland you just heard there. It's very good, isn't it, when you get people singing Mike Graham Burger Neck to you. I don't even know what Burger Neck is. It must be some kind of local insult that they use a lot in Sunderland. I don't even know if they have burgers up in Sunderland because, of course, the only sense I can get out of them is for them to sing to me down the phone. I'm very happy to have anyone who wants to call in from Sunderland to come in and sing to me as well. Maybe a song that I actually know, which would be good.
More gun talk from a water pistol from the Farmer of Fury.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. It's right here on Talk Radio. 0344 499 1000 is the number to call us on. We're going to talk about Mars now, because not only does Elon Musk want to move there, I was slagging it off earlier, and not one person has yet come back to me to say that I was in the wrong. We're going to talk to Lucinda now, though. Lucinda Offer, a geophysicist at the Royal Astronomical Society, because NASA's InSight rover has landed on Mars on the surface and sent back a selfie of itself, which is pretty cool. Lucinda, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us. It's quite an exciting time for you guys, isn't it, watching exactly what NASA's InSight rover is going to be getting up to. It's touched down after 7 months, more than 300 million miles. $1 billion has been put into it. What are we going to see over the next few days?
Well, there's three primary things that the InSight rover has. It's basically to take the vital signs of this planet Mars that we are so intrigued by. But the first thing is it's going to take the pulse of the planet. And that's basically via a seismometer that's going to lay on the ground. And that's going to pick up vibrations, basically seismic waves. And it's going to work with another instrument, which is called the MOLE, or a heat probe. And it's going to dig down about 5 meters. And that's going to do several things. One, it's going to take the temperature of the planet over time. And also, it's going to send out pulses of heat so we can find out the thermal conductivity of the soil around it. How quickly does it heat up, or how slowly does it heat up?
Right.
And also, it's as it hammers down, the seismometer is going to pick up on those vibrations. And as those vibrations move through the planet, it's going to change. This is what happens on our planet. This is how we know what's inside our planet, the core, the mantle, and what its composition is made up of, by how these waves change as they move through the interior of our planet. And so if we could do that on Mars, then we can kind of take what we've learned from Earth and figure out maybe what our mantle is made out of, our core is made out of. And the third instrument is going to check Mars's reflexes, which is basically going to look at the wobble of the planet. So our planet rotates on an axis, and it has a bit of a wobble. But we want to study the wobble of Mars and find out. That'll tell us whether the core in Mars is either liquid or solid.
And if it was liquid, then it could have been something that had a magnetic field. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what produces our magnetic field on Earth. And then, of course, if it's not as liquid or if it's solid, then that's the reasons why. Mars has a bit of a remnant left of a magnetic field. It's lost a lot of atmosphere, so it doesn't have that protection of a really robust magnetic field like Earth does.
Right. And one of the things, I suppose, that's very good for us in the UK is that there's some UK space agency involvement in this particular mission, isn't there?
Oh, there's a lot of UK science team. Yeah, there's a team from Imperial and a team from Oxford. And I know that the team from Oxford, so Tom Pike, he worked on microseismometers, and this is stuff he's been working on for a long time. So the UK teams have basically helped out create SEIS, the seismometer that's going to be laid on the ground.
Okay. And what exactly will we see that we haven't seen, if you know what I mean? I know that the picture that came back yesterday was kind of fixed from a camera on its robotic arm. Does it have any other ways of sending pictures, or are those all the pictures? Are we going to be sitting here a week from now going, oh, not another picture from Mars that looks exactly like the last one?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's going to be slow going, right? Because there's a time delay as that we're going to get back from from getting data back from the rover. Or, sorry, it's not a rover. It's a lander, right? It's situated. It's not going to move around. So where it's landed, that's where it's going to be, just like the Phoenix lander was. But, yeah, it's going to take some time. It's got to unfurl its solar panels. And it did everything it needed to do yesterday, which was open its solar panels so it could start charging the batteries, taking a picture, and then it put itself to sleep. And it's going to take about 10 weeks, really, before we start doing some actual work. Mm. The first things that are probably put to use right away are the RISE antennae, and that antennae is going to start looking at the weather in the environment around the rover and also the temperature of the environment around the rover.
Okay. And I know this is not a particularly scientific question, but what do you make of Elon Musk saying the other day that there's a 70% probability that he's going to go to Mars because of the breakthroughs with SpaceX? I mean, I know it's slightly out of this world to talk about Elon Musk here, but what do you reckon?
It's not, actually. So I also work for the Mars Society, and I've been doing that since 2002.
Okay.
So what I've heard about Elon Musk is that we were a huge inspiration for him early on in before the formation of SpaceX.
Right.
And so that's headed by our president, Dr. Robert Zubrin, who worked for Martin Marietta back in the 80s and I guess in the 80s, probably in the 90s. And he created something called Mars Direct, how to get humans to Mars cheaper than NASA was saying it would cost at the time. And that actually has been adapted by NASA as Mars Semi-Direct. And so that kind of initial work inspired Elon to create a space company, because it's frustrating. I mean, we love NASA and we love what they do, and they do amazing things like land this heavy. It was actually a more massive lander than Phoenix that they just landed on Mars yesterday.
Right, okay.
Yes. So they do amazing accomplishments. But of course, we are frustrated with the pace. We should have been to Mars 8 years after we landed on the moon. We're about to celebrate the 50th anniversary of humans on the moon next year in 2019. We should have been on Mars a long time ago. So bravo, kudos to Elon Musk for doing what he's doing, because he's just determined to make it happen. And that's who the Mars Society members are. They're action doers. They don't want to talk about things. They want to make it happen.
Right. And you're quite happy that there can be sort of private enterprise and sort of state-owned space exploration at the same time.
Absolutely. And that's always existed, right? NASA's always used contractors, private space, Boeing, Airbus, Lockheed Martin. So that's always existed. It's nothing new, to be honest. I think what Elon is doing is kind of even showing those other private companies, you don't have to play the same game with NASA. So he's just, I'm not going to wait around sometimes about to get funding. Of course, you reliable on funding, just as any private company would be. But he's then gone beyond that and thrown his own money into it to pick up the pace.
So
we are way behind on space exploration.
So you think there will be, say, in our lifetimes, some trip to Mars that we could go on, or some people could go on?
Goodness, I hope so. So the Mars Society focuses on humans to Mars within a decade.
Okay.
Because we did humans to the moon within, 8 years? So we did it pretty quickly, and that was as a homage, a legacy to John F. Kennedy at the time.
Right.
Because he was, unfortunately, was assassinated. So the next president decided, I'm going to take on his legacy and make it happen what he wanted to do. And it was a really incredible challenge for humanity.
Yeah.
And we think we really need that and especially this time. We've got so much talent that we're not tapping into. And if we just put our heads together and work together, I think this is definitely a goal that we could easily do within a decade.
Okay. Fascinating stuff, Lucinda. So kind of you to talk to us. Thank you. So Lucinda Offer, the geophysicist at the Royal Astronomical Society and executive director of the Mars Society. It is amazing, isn't it, what you can do when you actually put some effort into it. Elon Musk, a lot of people think, is a bit of an eccentric character. He's saying he has a 70% surety that he's going to head to Mars in his lifetime. 0344 499 1000. We've got loads of calls to take, and we're going to take loads more of them. Coming up, we're going to talk about why it is that still, in this day and age, people want to ship into this country endangered animal body parts that have been sliced off animals that have been shot dead by hunters in exotic parts of the world. It really does beg a belief. We're going to talk to the Born Free Foundation. We're going to go back to Sunderland, though, now, before we head to the news. Kieran is on, wants to tell me about it. Hello, Kieran.
Hello, Mike.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I've actually lived out away from Sunderland for the last 7 years.
Okay. But, do you miss it?
My family are all there.
Do you miss it?
I do. I miss it a lot. And I think one of the factors that made Sunderland come out on top was that happiness factor. They were talking about the opinions of the people that lived there.
Right.
Now, you've had a pretty bad experience on Twitter with the guys ripping into you a bit.
Well, do you know what? I don't take it too seriously, Kieran, but I do think people need to lighten up a little bit.
No, you're right. I mean, living in Sunderland, you've got to have a sense of humour, pal. I living down here, I get a lot of stick for it, especially with our football team.
Right.
Not only that, I work with a lot of Geordie lads, so I get stick for that as well because they think.
Well, listen, I mean, I'm quite good friends with a few Geordies, and I've never heard so much stick and abuse given out in my life as they do to people from Sunderland.
They're obsessed. They're obsessed with Sunderland. That's what their problem is.
Right.
They have Newcastle guys go to Sunderland matches to take the piss out of Sunderland. Sorry, as I swore.
Yeah, no, don't worry. We didn't hear it. But, I mean, here's the thing, though, Kieran. I mean, listen, I think it's very important that people are proud of where they come from. I think it's great that they defend their home and their sort of heritage and all of that. But I just think we are in this bizarre world now where you people almost don't know the difference between somebody saying something really hurtful and something that's actually just taking the mickey, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
I just wish people had a bit more perspective. I love the northeast of England. I haven't been to Sunderland, but I've been to almost every other part. I've done a show in Whitley Bay. I've done a show with Mike Parry in Newcastle. You know, we love it up there, but I've just never been to Sunderland. But the overreaction has been quite remarkable.
You do need a visit, though. I think it'll change your opinion of it.
Listen,
not only the guys. I mean, it's one of the friendliest places. You don't get the same kind of atmosphere being down south.
Yes.
I mean, I can be stood in a queue and it's a lonely place down here.
Yeah, but that's because nobody wants to talk to anybody down here. But actually, that's the way we like it. I mean, I can't stand it if people start talking to me. It makes me feel quite unwell. When I lived in New York City, I used to go to this particular newsagent. One day I went in and the guy said, "You're a bit late this morning." I never went back. I'm like, how dare you know what my movements are? I'm never coming here again. You know, that's kind of just the way we are. But listen, you're obviously a very sane man, Kieran. Welcome to the South. I hope it's not too traumatic for you. And I appreciate that you've rung in. And I think you've done more than enough to bring Sunderland back into civilization. So thank you very much indeed. Kieran from Sunderland, what a nice chap. Just proves that there are plenty of great people out there, plenty of great people in Sunderland. They're not all horrible, nasty pieces of work who want to see me dead. And I knew that all along, really. Now, just take it easy, will you?
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So if you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. The twigs and leaves in your yard aren't exactly comfortable, and while mud does perfectly contour the feet, it doesn't score high on the durability front. But thanks to Allbirds, you can skip all the backyard experimentation. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff like research and testing to create shoes from natural, sustainable materials. And their innovative processes mean using less of the bad stuff and more of the good, while making shoes unlike any other. Like the Plant Pacer, made with 100% plastic-free plant leather. The Tree Dasher, a running shoe made from eucalyptus tree fiber. And from sugarcane, they've made the Superlight, their lightest shoe ever by weight and carbon footprint. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're super natural. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com today. That's Allbirds.com.